Ohio approved and licensed for disposal. At Ron Evans Enterprises, they specialize in sewage system installation and repair. Ron Evans has a full line of flex pipe, culverts, concrete and plastic septic tanks, sewer fittings, waterline rolls for the Home American water heaters, along with toilets, standard and ADA. It's all at Ron Evans Enterprise, LLC. Give them a call today at 1-800-537-9528 or 740-286-5930.
Would you like to work closer to home, save money on gas, and be rewarded for your hard work and attendance? Then Belicio Foods is looking for you. That's right. Belicio Foods is now hiring for multiple positions and shifts with great employee benefits, an on-site health clinic, competitive wages, and advancement opportunities. Belicio Foods is a company that truly values their employees. Apply online at beliciofoods.com/careers.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the morning show right here on Main Street TV, where it is a very, very dreary and blacky Monday, but it is warm outside.
It is.
Yeah.
We will, I mean, if that's the worst we have, we're okay.
That's something.
Yes, exactly. Pull your mic up just a little bit there.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. They're a little sensitive.
Okay.
So. Well, we have some very, very special guests in the house today. And of course, some friends from Holzer, which are we always, always love to have here on the program. And you have to pardon my sinus, whatever is going on. See, we have doctors here. Maybe they can, or a doctor here, they can help us along the way. But anyway, could you introduce yourselves? And then we are going to get to some interesting topics today.
I'm Ashley Smith, the OBGYN nurse navigator.
Okay.
And I am Dr. Robert Bowers, OBGYN at Holzer, Galpolis, and Jackson.
And Dr. Bowers, of course, has been here before.
Yeah.
We talked about all kind of fun stuff when you were here. And but today we're going to talk about something very unique, I guess.
That's a fact.
Yeah. So I walked in late. I was chasing my corgi around the horse field. Because she was not wanting to come in this morning. So I'm looking at these questions. So I didn't really have time to prepare much, but you guys threw me a loop. So
we got you.
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, nurse navigator, let's talk about that for a minute. Could you explain what that is?
Sure. I do a lot of scheduling for OBGYN.
Okay.
So scheduling deliveries, scheduling procedures, and also upkeeping our doctors' schedules.
And that sounds like that would be a very, very consuming job.
It's a job.
Very consuming.
It's a job. We change our schedules like we change our pants. It's terrible. Constantly, she's putting new schedules on our desks because somebody had to switch this call shift or that call shift. Yeah, it's a full-time job for sure.
Well, and it would be because, let's just be honest, babies, you can't really control whenever they decide to be born and whenever they want to come out or not come out.
Right.
Or
right.
Whatever. So, yes, it would just be a constant, ongoing shift in,
it definitely is.
Change. Yeah, I gotcha. Well, cool. So, Dr. Bowers, when you were here before, we talked about some of the stuff that you do. But
right.
In case somebody wasn't, you know, happened to tune in that day, could we talk about a little bit about, you know, what you do there at Holzer and where you see patients, that kind of thing?
For sure. So I specifically see patients at the Holzer Galpolis location and the Holzer Jackson location. We do have OBGYN services also at the Miggs branch in Proctorville and Athens as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we offer those services all those places. I only see patients in Galpolis and Jackson. Some of the services that I offer include obviously obstetric care. So for, you know, during pregnancies, also just, you know, office gynecology care, which is just normal well woman care.
Yes.
And then gynecologic surgery. I don't know how I got shoehorned as the pelvic floor guy. So like when things aren't sitting where they used to be, I put them back where they're supposed to go.
Hey, listen, that's good.
Yeah. And so I do a lot of that. Yeah, absolutely. I do a lot of that.
You do.
And then I also do da Vinci robotic surgery, as far as if you have like a, you know, a difficult hysterectomy for a patient who has had multiple cesarean deliveries or multiple other surgeries, or maybe they have really bad scar tissue from, you know, endometriosis or things like that. Then I can do those robotic procedures. There are three of us that offer those services, and I'm one of those. So
that is very cool. And can you kind of give like a little bit of background on the da Vinci? I know we've talked about it before here with a couple of the docs, but has this kind of, like, I mean, you're talking about like robotic stuff. That's pretty neat, like technology.
It is. It's really neat. And it just keeps advancing every year. You know, even just software updates and
I was gonna
hardware
say,
updates.
Like update and all of that. And so then it can help you even more. And
Absolutely. You know, I've heard, I don't know this to be a fact, but I've heard that originally robotic surgery was developed by companies with contracts with the military, because you were going to have like a very specialized vascular surgeon sitting in Chicago doing surgery on a patient in, you know, Afghanistan remotely. So how cool would that be, right? But then obviously that, you know, went into the private sector, and there were a lot of applications there as far as surgeries that are technically difficult and in hard to reach places. So a lot of urologists will do robotic prostatectomies. So for like prostate cancer, that's a really hard place to reach in the human body. Anything as far as pelvic surgery, so, you know, hysterectomies, oophorectomies, which is like ovaries and things like that.
Okay.
All those places that are kind of hard to reach, robotic surgery does a really good job of assisting the surgeon and letting them be like the best that they can be.
So how does it, this is so fascinating to me, does it, is it, so basically you're working and then it's hands?
Yeah. So it looks kind of like a, I don't want to freak people out, but it looks kind of like a, like
well,
a,
let's do it.
Like a spider kind of. It's got like four, it's got four arms. And so the robotic cart just wheels up to the patient and everybody's scrubbed in. It's sterile, you know, got sterile drapes on everything. And the robotic cart gets kind of mounted to these special robotic ports to the patient, and it knows where it is in space. And as far as, you know, the proprioception of the arms,
So you're physically controlling it.
Yeah, I am at the robotic console, which is over in the corner. So I'm controlling the arms from the console. I'm controlling the camera from the console while the patient is, you know, over here, still on the operating table to my left. It's pretty crazy.
But it's really super precise. Like, it is. Even more than, obviously, a human hand.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which is why you use it.
Yeah, and it has actually allowed a lot of surgeons that, over the years, you'll start to sometimes develop an essential tremor, you know, just kind of a little bit of a tremor if you use your hands for something a whole lot.
Right. So
a lot of those surgeons have been able to get kind of back in the game and become, you know, really productive again, because it accounts for that. You're not going to have any kind of essential tremor to worry about.
Okay. So, or like an arthritis or any, or a hand injury or
absolutely.
Anything like that where
absolutely.
You, it can do it for you.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. So, what are some of the, so we think about OBGYN, and, you know, you and I talked about it when you were here before, is obviously, you know, seeing women, you know, for their yearly exams, obviously delivering babies.
Right.
That's like the fun part.
Right.
But what are some of the other things that you, you know, see throughout the year?
So the vast majority of my visits, if they're not annual visits or, you know, obstetric visits, are going to be what we call problem visits. If there's something going on, if somebody's having, you know, painful cycles, abnormal cycles, things like that.
Women are so complex.
Yeah. No, and that's okay. That's good. But yeah, if there's something going on, that's a huge percent of the visits that we see to try and help fix that. And then, you know, as you, you know, go through life, different problems arise. And so I see a lot of patients for, you know, as you transition through menopause, I see a lot of patients for that transition.
Yes. When you get to my age and all these weird things start happening.
Hot flashes.
29. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's 29. Crazy. 29, huh? Yeah. Wild.
It is so crazy. No. But no, it is funny as you know, you have friends that you grew up with, right? And mm-hmm. you have friends you went to college with and whatever. And, you know, you're all about the same age. And it's funny, you know, in your 20s, we would get together and have dinner and we would talk about boyfriends and, you know, whatever. And then you get into your 30s and you talk about kids and then, you know, whatever. And now we get together and we're like, have y'all started hot flashes yet? And I'm like, God, this is ridiculous. But it is an age and it is, you know, a chapter in your life.
Yeah.
And don't be embarrassed by it or whatever. You just have to
absolutely
kinda,
not.
It's just, we can't help it, man.
Hey, and shout out to my mom. She texts me every morning and she says, now, Robert, you be nice to those menopausal women. Because she, you know, she's of an age. And every morning she texts me, you be nice to those menopausal women. Hey.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah. Shout out to Mom.
No, I'm not quite there yet. But that, no, it is, it's, as a woman, and I'm sure Ashley can attest to this, it's just like weird things happen. And sometimes you're like either embarrassed or like you feel alone or you don't know whether it's something you should seek treatment for or whatever. What would you say, you know, to somebody that's like, oh, this weird thing is happening and I just, I'm even embarrassed to call the doctor about it.
There is almost certainly nothing that I haven't seen or that my partners haven't seen before. There is no reason to be embarrassed by anything like that. It doesn't matter what the issue is. We've probably heard or seen worse. So, you know, that's a huge part of women's healthcare is it's a very intimate, private thing. And you have to be able to trust your doc. You have to be able to trust your healthcare provider, your midwife, whoever. But yeah, try and develop that trust with your provider. And it doesn't matter what's going on. We're not there to judge you. We're there to help you. So,
yeah. And I think that once you can get, if you can get your mind past that, like, you know, I promise you, you're not the first time anybody's seen something like that. And if you are, that's even cool.
Yeah. Like, well, you never want to be cool to your OBGYN.
No. Interesting. No, but I love your answer because that's a reason and that's a true testament to why you have such a wonderful following as well. You know, I hear such wonderful things about you and that's why, because your mom texts you every morning and tells you how to be.
You be nice.
No, I think you're that way by nature for sure. So, okay. So, accepting new patients, are people allowed to call and call you and get in with the doc?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can call our phone center at 740-446-5381. We also have online scheduling available for all of our providers at www.holzer.org.
Yeah, and if you have not checked out Holzer.org, it's a wonderful website for so many different reasons. I mean, you can pay your bills online, you can schedule online, you can chat with your doctors. You know, there's all kind of things that you can do throughout that website that can kind of make your life a lot easier.
Absolutely. Yeah, they have access to the patient portal on there. So if, you know, a lot of times patients will see results before I even get to see results. It's like, you can get access to that stuff like immediately.
It's wild. All you have to do is set up an account, set up your account. And then, you know, if you have a test run, you wait a day or two or however long it takes for them to read it and, you know, full test results on there. And so, yeah.
Yeah. And you're your own best advocate that way because, you know, the doc has several hundred patients that they're worried about and they've got to get through all these different results for everybody. Whereas if you're your own best advocate, you're on your chart, you're looking at that stuff immediately. So
it's like, you know, yeah, like you say, oh, wait, okay, that test result's the same as last year and we're hoping it didn't change. So cool. I don't have to worry about it anymore. I have to wait for the doc to call me and say, you don't have to worry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's a good thing.
Yep.
All right. And so can you... This is kind of getting deep, but like, can we go through maybe like a timeline while you're here? I think it's kind of fun and we have you for a minute.
Yeah.
Of different stages of women's health.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when should a girl start seeing you and for what? And then you know, transition throughout her life. Pick Sally.
Yeah.
Sally is now 16 years old. What should Sally do?
So the vast majority of patients that I see in their teenage years, so Sally comes in at 16 years old, most of those issues are going to be because of irregular cycles and sometimes pregnancy.
Which is totally not abnormal, irregular cycles and all that.
Yeah, super common, especially at that age. The parts of the brain that control your cycle are maturing for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And that is very common to see, especially in the teenage years. Even from the very start of when women start cycling, you know, to, you know, or as early as, you know, 9, 10, 11 years old. And I'll see patients through that entire spectrum of ages. As you get a little bit older, around the age of 21, unless there's some very, very specific factors that most people in this area don't have, then you'll start with your pap smear screening, which
around is around 21.
Yeah. Age 21 is when you start. And that is to screen for cervical cancer. And it is the most effective screening program in the world.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it is unbelievably effective at detecting. Very simple. Yeah. And the reason it's so successful is because we can detect precursors to cervix cancer much earlier than actual development of a malignancy. Okay. So it's very important that you get in starting at age 21. Again, unless you have very specific indications like, you know, human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, things like that. Get in at 21. Unless you have those things going on, to start that screening. And it does not have to be every year. That's a common misconception. So early on, we recommend specifically cytology, which means we're looking at the cells under the microscope. We're not doing human papillomavirus-based screening at that time. So HPV is what causes the vast majority of cervix cancers.
And there's a vaccine for that now, right?
There is.
That didn't exist when I was growing up, or if it did, I didn't know about
it. Did actually. It's been around for several decades.
Then was it not pushed for people like
it wasn't very popular when it first came onto the market because there was a misconception that, oh, they're, you know, we're vaccinating our teenagers against HPV, it's going to encourage them to have, you know, unprotected intercourse and all kinds of stuff.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but
it's going to happen anyway.
Probably going to do it anyway.
It's going to happen anyway. No. But yeah, initially it wasn't super popular and has since gained, you know, a massive amount of popularity, and it's basically universal for adolescents to get the Gardasil vaccine.
What age do you get that vaccine?
So you can start that as early as the recommendation is 11, but the FDA has approved it for as early as 9 years old.
And they're for girls and boys?
Yeah, girls and boys. And
let's be honest, the boys have something to do with it too.
They do. They do indeed. And the vast majority of males will not be symptomatic with HPV infection. Mm-hmm. So nothing ultimately happens with that, but they're carrying it and
the girls are the recipients
handing it around.
It.
Yeah.
Thanks.
But yes, absolutely recommended that males and females get the Gardasil vaccine, typically starting at 11. If you start at age 9 to 11, then it's a 2 vaccine series.
Okay.
If you're a little bit older, then you might have to do a 3 vaccine series.
Okay.
But yeah, definitely recommended.
All right. I mean, if you can prevent things before they start, doesn't that make sense?
Oh, for sure. Right. Yeah. An ounce of prevention. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we talked about that. And so then Sally gets to past 21 and she moves up in age.
Yeah. Yeah. So typically, you know, after you've started your pap smear screening, we're just talking about routine well woman care, which is, you know, making sure your pap smear is up to date, encouraging self breast exams if you're not doing those and how to do those.
Yes.
And then typically if you're having any issues, we will do a clinical breast exam at that time as well.
Okay.
I usually talk to my patients about, do they want a pelvic exam at their annual? Are they having any problems? Because it isn't necessarily recommended to do a pelvic exam every single year if you don't have anything going on. It's just kind of an unnecessary, uncomfortable exam. But the vast majority of my patients are like, I'm here. Just make sure nothing's going on. So,
I mean, yeah, I get that thought. Yeah. Why not?
And really, we're just checking for abnormalities on the cervix. We're checking for abnormalities with the uterus and with the ovaries. So do you have any big cysts? Do you have any fibroids, which are benign tumors of the uterus, things like that? But yeah. And so then as you move through the years, as you get into your 30s and 40s, we're typically talking about that's when some of the what we call pelvic floor dysfunction starts to rear its ugly head because you've had a few kids and things don't sit quite where they used to sit. Or, you know, one of the really, really common complaints that I see personally is I can't go jog, I can't go laugh, I can't pick things up. Can't sneeze, or here it comes. I'm gonna pee my pants.
Yeah.
So that's a common one that I see. And a new service that we're offering at Holzer is pelvic floor physical therapy.
Okay.
Which is a dedicated physical therapist, and she works with those patients to strengthen the pelvic floor muscles because that's a muscle, and to help keep them dry. So and lots of other things too, but.
You know, and see, so that very thing that you just mentioned, number one, is something that, you know, we girls all laugh about and whatever, like, but you don't want to laugh because then, you know, you pee your pants, but, which is not, it is very common, but probably not normal, like not good.
It's not necessarily normal. It's super common. And there's definitely a taboo surrounding it.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, everybody.
It's one of those things that you don't want to go talk to your doctor about, but you should.
Yeah. When you're talking to your girlfriends, you're like, oh yeah, that's a thing. I don't want to laugh because I'm going to pee my pants.
Right.
But you should talk to your doc about that.
Yeah. Because it there are things that you can do that are pretty simple to help that along the way.
For sure.
But that's where you come in. Now, you said that things aren't necessarily where they're supposed to be anymore. Like, could you kind of expand upon that?
I will elaborate.
Yes.
It gets a little bit graphic, but sometimes the...
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Yeah. Sometimes the...
It's Monday.
Yeah, it's a Monday, April Fool's.
Right?
Sometimes the anterior wall of the vagina, the posterior wall of the vagina, or the top of the vagina itself, it's not supporting the bladder, the rectum, or the uterus the way that it should.
Okay.
And so the bladder can kind of fall into the vaginal cavity. That's called a cystocele. The rectum can kind of pooch into the vaginal cavity. That's called a rectocele.
Okay.
Or the internal, like specifically the bowel, the small intestine, the large intestine can kind of fall down through the top, and that's called an enterocele.
This sounds terrifying.
Yeah.
How do you know if this is happening to you?
Most patients complain of pressure, and there's a bulge down there that they didn't used to see. Yep.
Okay.
Typically not super painful. If you have a lot of pain involved with pelvic floor dysfunction, there's probably something else going on.
Okay.
But yeah, a lot of patients describe pressure and something down there that didn't used to be down there. So.
Okay.
Yep. For sure.
And this is no April Fool's joke.
Not an April Fool's joke. And we can put that back where it goes.
Okay.
It's called.
So you can fix that.
Yeah. It's called a coprolithrophy. Is what it's called.
Anterior. You don't have to learn that word.
Nope. Just call. I tell my patients all they know that I say colloquially, we call it a bladder tuck. So
that we can remember.
Yeah, bladder tuck. And then another thing that I do, my partners do it sometimes, but I do the vast majority of them. It's called a tension-free vaginal tape. That's a mouthful, but. It's basically a tiny little skinny piece of mesh that goes underneath the urethra and helps you stay dry. So keeps you from laughing, coughing, sneezing, and peeing your pants.
Okay.
Yep.
And again, I just think it's important for ladies to understand that this is, it's not like an abnormal thing. Like, it's not right, but it's not an abnormal thing.
It's not normal, but it is unbelievably common.
Common.
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So don't feel like you're alone in that, and don't be afraid to go talk to your doctor about it, because wouldn't it be a lot nicer to not have to deal with that situation?
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
For sure. Okay. And then so as we get a little bit older, how often are there times where you do go to a yearly pap, or, you know, like when does...
There are times, there are indications if you start having abnormal paps because, you know, you have a history of HPV infection or you know, other things, then you can fall into a more frequent screening guideline that would be, you know, annual pap smears. Again, a lot of my patients, they just prefer to know, and they say, I'm here for my annual and I'm going to get my pap.
Right.
So that's fine. I absolutely will do that for patients. That doesn't mean that you have to do that every year. As long as you're having normal results, you can space those out a little bit. And it varies based on what testing you have done to every 3 to even every 5 years.
Okay.
But most of my patients, they're going to come in for their annual and they'll be like, yep, let's do the pap smear.
Go ahead and do it.
Let's do it.
I mean, what? It's not hurting anything to do it.
Right.
If it gives you peace of mind, cool.
Absolutely.
So when do we start with women with mammograms and things such as that?
Absolutely.
When do we graduate to that fun stuff?
Yeah. So, yeah, that's where we are exactly.
I know that the ages have changed over years.
Right. Yeah. So a big change specifically that I want to highlight is the age of colonoscopies has decreased from 50 for a lot of populations to 45 for everyone. So not just colonoscopies, I should say colon cancer screening. It used to be that in Black and African American populations, screening guidelines were 45 years old. And everybody else, 50.
Yes.
That's when you started screening. Everybody's 45 now. You start screening at 45 for colorectal cancer. Whatever screening you want to do, there's the Cologuard, which is just a DNA test. There's a colonoscopy. There's a virtual colonoscopy. There's a lot of different screenings that you can do. But
okay, and I know that's not your department, but when do you know? How do you know what's right for you? Because like the Cologuard, for example, and I mean this is graphic, but I mean whatever. It's Monday, and I've taken cold medicine, so I'm just going to talk about it.
We're already talking about vaginas.
We're already talking about weird stuff. Yeah. But I had a colonoscopy, and they found like I think 6 polyps or something, which
right.
terrified me. I was like, oh my god, what does that mean? And they're like, don't. It's just we fixed it. It's fine.
We got them.
But
go back at 5 years, probably. Is what
yeah.
they told you.
So okay, cool. So but like the Cologuard is like, I'll let you explain that.
So
how that works.
You literally just take a stool sample and they test it for specific high risk DNA. And the Cologuard is for low risk patients only. So if you have a family history of colon cancer,
I was gonna say, how do you know if you're low risk or high risk?
Right. That's something that you're going to want to talk with your doctor at length about what screening is right for you.
Okay.
But those patients that have a family history of colorectal cancer, especially if it's early colorectal cancer.
Okay.
Or if they have any kind of a DNA mutation that makes them high risk, specifically like Lynch syndrome, used to be called hereditary non-polyposis colorectal cancer syndrome, HNPCC. Yeah, there's
all
a mouthful.
Right.
But that's something you're going to want to talk with your doc about. There's
okay.
The breadth and width of colon cancer screening is probably more than what we're ready to cover today.
Yeah, and that's not – that's definitely not your, main focus and what we're here to talk about today. But
yeah, I definitely offer that to my patients.
Yes.
Because I am primary care, technically. So,
And that's how I ended up, in talking with my OBGYN. I mentioned something. That's how I ended up getting my colonoscopy was because he was like, oh, I don't like that.
Right.
Let's do this. Yeah.
But back to mammograms.
Yes.
The recommendation varies from society to society. Now, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, which is the one that is like dedicated for OBGYNs.
Yes.
ACOG recommends starting mammograms at 40 and having a conversation with your doctor about starting them at 40.
Okay.
So if you're someone who's higher risk or you have genetic, mutations that predispose you to breast cancer, that's going to change the recommendation for when you start screening.
Okay.
And again, you're going to have to go through that. It's a pretty extensive conversation with your doc to figure out, are you someone that needs to start early with mammograms or breast ultrasounds or otherwise?
Well, and I feel like, isn't it kind of like a family history deal? Like
yes.
My mom, my aunt, my sister,
absolutely
everybody
is.
Has had breast cancer. Like we probably are going to start this way earlier than somebody
right.
else.
That's the broad strokes of it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But for normal risk patients, 40 years old is when ACOG recommends starting those mammograms.
And again, listen, mammograms are not fun. But they're necessary. And Holzer has the coolest mammogram now.
We
have you
do.
Had that done?
The 3D mammogram.
It is so neat. And it if you can get to take an actual look at it, like, because it basically is a mammogram, but it kind of like divides it up into slices, so you can like zoom in and zoom out. It's really cool.
So, and they call it tomosynthesis, I think is the fancy word for it. That's the fancy word for a 3D mammogram.
And it doesn't hurt nearly as bad as the other one.
It is less painful for patients. You get better imaging.
Yes.
And I think the whatever the governing radiology society is, their recommendation, I think, is leaning towards everyone using screening with 3D mammogram. Now, there is a slightly higher dose of radiation with 3D mammogram. And so you have to take that into account, and that's a conversation, again, with your doc.
With your doctor.
Yeah. If you're somebody who has to get them every 6 months because of risk factors,
yeah,
maybe you should just do the classic 2D flat mammogram. It's less radiation, less concern there.
But again, it's all case to case. And it's
absolutely.
Your, you know, and be your own advocate. If you don't feel like you're like, I don't know about all that radiation, I don't know if I like that or not, say something.
Right. Absolutely.
It's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get to tell everybody what to do, right? Like, you have that conversation.
Yeah, I am just there to give you my recommendations. I am not there to be paternalistic and tell you, this is what you're going to do. So I'm just here to talk to you about your options.
See? Okay, so mammograms, are they every year then at 40 on?
Yes, it's recommended you get an annual mammogram unless you have something else going on. And then we might follow up with additional images or more frequent mammograms. And we talked about colon cancer screening. When you're in your 40s and 50s is when we start to kind of ask questions about any family history of osteoporosis.
Okay.
And we start to think, okay, is this someone who needs early screening for osteoporosis, especially when you're in your 50s? Okay. Typical screening is going to start around age 65.
Okay.
But that's when you start to kind of, okay, is this somebody who needs earlier screening? And also, when you're in your 40s and 50s, that's when, kind of classically, menopause is kind of approaching.
That's when you get with your girlfriends and have some wine and laugh at each other.
Laugh at about the hot flashes. Yeah. That's right. So average age of menopause in the U.S. is about 51 and a half years. That's average. A little earlier for some populations, a little later for others. But I start seeing patients with complaints about what we call perimenopause, or the time around the start of menopause, usually starting around age 45, give or take.
Okay.
You'll start having some of those night sweats, some of those hot flashes, mood changes, estrogen levels start to drop a little bit.
So, what causes this whole thing? I know it's not what we're here to talk about either, but you know what? Why did the good Lord do this to us?
It's kind of one of those things where the
serious, like, ongoing April Fool's joke. It really is.
It is. No, honestly, the ovarian reserve is the fancy word that we use. The ovarian reserve starts to kind of trend downward.
Okay.
And so you're not developing as high quality eggs every month. And so those estrogen and progesterone levels aren't the same every month. And so you're not getting the same feedback to the part of your brain that controls your cycle every month. So cycles
start getting erratic.
Right. Cycles start to either space out or maybe get closer together. It can kind of go either way.
Yeah.
And then you'll start to develop some of those symptoms of hormone changes. So the hot flashes, the night sweats, low estrogen changes can cause the skin around the area of the genitals to change. And we call that atrophy. Is what it's called. It's not a very nice term, but
okay.
Anyway, and then definitely the mood changes can happen then as well. But it's definitely a spectrum, and it is a long process that can last years.
Yeah.
So people,
it's like a sick joke.
Sometimes have a misconception that it's like, oh, I went through menopause this day. No, it's years of managing symptoms, Yeah, a lot of that.
Some people, you know, obviously have a harder time than others with it.
Absolutely.
You just don't know how your body's going to react, I would guess.
And we're finding more and more that the brain and the brain chemistry is what controls a lot of those what we call vasomotor symptoms, so hot flashes, night sweats. It's not so much just your estrogen level, but estrogen plays a role in your brain chemistry, and your brain chemistry is what controls that thermostat. Yeah.
Yeah, the nights, like I just personally, I haven't really noticed anything other than waking up in the middle of the night and just
drenched.
Yeah. And like, what is happening?
Yeah. So no, that's super common. And the first thing that we always recommend is lifestyle changes. So dress in layers, especially if you're going to bed. If you start off cold, be able to take off, you know, sweatshirt, take off sweatpants, sure, whatever. And also other behavioral changes. They have these really cool fans that go underneath your bed and like blow air under the sheets.
Ooh.
Yeah. You can get them on Amazon. Yeah. Check
thanks,
it out.
Thanks, Amazon. Yeah. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah. But, and then, you know, we can talk about other, some of the over-the-counter remedies, black cohosh, stuff like that to alter estrogen levels. And then if all those things are unsuccessful, we start talking about actual pharmacologic agents, sure, like hormone replacement or other things.
I feel like, you know, most people certainly would want to try anything they could before you started getting, you know, into prescription medicine and all that. But we should have you come back and we could talk about menopause one day.
That'd be great.
I can tell you all my little things. And what would be fun is to get like a little panel of women together that are of different stages.
And we could go through questions about it. For sure. That'd be awesome.
That's a good, keep that in your mind there, Dylan. Okay. So those are kind of the, so once we get
stages
into menopause, that it's just like, whatever. And then when are you ever done getting like your yearly exams and all that? Like, are you ever like, I'm done with you?
You're never getting rid of me. Okay. Not completely.
Dang it. Now, love you, but dang it.
Phase things out. Yes. Usually around age 65.
Okay.
If you've had routine normal pap screenings, then you can stop.
Okay.
Around age 65. And again, it's a conversation with your provider. If you are 65 and you're single and ready to mingle, maybe you should continue your pap smears. You know, but that's definitely a conversation with your doc. And then also joint, you know, shared decision making around age 75. Some people will stop mammograms.
Okay.
But again, shared decision making, is that something that you want to do? Are you high risk? Like, what is your life expectancy moving forward? All those things come into play.
Okay. Again, it's an individual basis, and absolutely, that's a conversation to have with your doctor.
There you go.
All right. So Miss Ashley is not here just to look pretty this morning, although she is looking real pretty this morning. But you are here to talk about like the last half of the questions that I have written here. And this is like super bizarro to me. So I'm going to let you kind of cover it. You are accepting new patients, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You can call and schedule that. So
absolutely.
But one of the things obviously that OBGYNs do are delivering babies. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the fun part.
It is. Yeah. Keeps you on your toes.
It would. Yeah. Like you just, you never know what your schedule is going to be.
You don't.
That's right.
Which is where you come in. But, so you actually have, I'm reading this and it says, to ask about placenta donation.
Yeah.
So I guess first off, if you don't know what that is, explain what a placenta is. And then let's talk about that situation.
Okay. Placenta is the amniotic sac that is in mommy's womb that helps support baby throughout the whole pregnancy.
So it's what the baby, the sac that the baby is in, that keeps it safe and healthy and fed and all of that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In addition to like the membranes, like when your water breaks, that's the membranes, the amniotic sac is rupturing. And then the actual placental tissue, that's what the baby uses to breathe, to get rid of waste, to get nutrients, to make hormones early. And
it's insane.
Yeah, it's a crazy organ. Crazy. We were talking about it earlier. It's an unbelievable organ. And so that's what it is.
So there's all kind of, let's just be honest, good stuff within the placenta. Yeah,
absolutely.
There is.
So
Lifeline of Ohio has started this program in 2019. Holzer has been involved in it since 2022. So any mommy that is having a C-section can donate their placenta after delivery. This does not change anything about the patient's delivery, and this does not cost the patient anything. And we recently hit a milestone that we celebrated. Holzer has had 100 placentas donated since the beginning of the program in 2022.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good job. So why just C-section?
It is, to say, the cleanest route to get that placenta. Yeah.
I got you.
So, yeah.
Okay. Fairly, not completely bacteria-free, so to speak, but a much more sterile procedure doing a C-section than traditional delivery, where, I mean, we're talking about, you know, exponentially more bacteria exposure.
Okay.
So
that makes sense. All right. And so, well, let me just back up here. What do they do with these said placentas?
Yeah, they make grafts. So they're called healing grafts, and they can be used for a wide range of procedures for eye, oral, spine. They can also be used to heal difficult wounds like diabetic ulcers, venous leg ulcers, and burns.
Yeah.
So these grafts.
That is amazing.
They've been shown to promote natural healing, decrease inflammation, scarring, and pain. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on average, one placenta can make 25 grafts. So we've had 100 donated so far. So you're looking at a possibility of 2,500 grafts from those donations.
And that's just from Holzer.
That's just Holzer, yeah.
Amazing.
And there are a lot of hospitals that are involved in this donation program, but we like to think we're the best.
Well, heck yeah. So number one, I guess, I don't want to be judgy, but why would you not?
It's a great question because normally,
what happens to it if you don't donate it?
There is a biohazard service that we use, and they're just disposed of. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some people, I don't want to get too in the weeds on this. Some people want to take it home. There are lots of different things that people will do when they take their placenta home. Some people will plant a tree. Some people will do other things with it.
Make pills.
Yeah. Smoothies. Some people get it dehydrated and make tablets out of it
to consume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Okay. And I am not judging anybody's decision.
Wild mothers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Dogs eat their placenta.
Yeah.
And
deer, all kinds of things. Yeah. It's nutrient packed.
It's very healthy.
Not here to judge.
No.
It's not something that I would personally pursue, but if that's what you want to do, great. But normally if you're not taking it home with you, it just gets disposed of.
Okay. So, which means to me, or sounds to me like, why not?
Right.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Just donate it.
And it's no cost to the patient. I think you already said that. And
here we go. Well, they're going to do an unneeded C-section on me just so that they can have my placenta.
Absolutely.
No.
No way.
I can hear it now.
So definitely, the vast majority of donations are coming from scheduled C-sections that are either for history of a prior C-section, history of a prior uterine surgery, because of a baby that's breech, and it would be more dangerous to do a vaginal delivery than a cesarean delivery. Typically, those donations are coming from those patients.
Okay.
Now
that they know it's coming.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's way ahead of time.
Yeah.
I don't think I've had a patient who, came in for an induction of labor and the intention was to have a vaginal delivery and then ended up needing a cesarean delivery for some reason, either, baby was too big, whatever.
Just wasn't happening.
I don't think I've had anyone who donated their placenta under those circumstances.
Okay.
So absolutely not. We're not going to be like, yo, let's go do a C-section because we can get that placenta.
Correct.
No, not going to happen.
Okay. So it's kind of planned ahead of time.
Yeah. Certainly.
So how does one participate in this program then? If you're like, okay, yeah, that sounds great. I mean, I want to help others.
Well, a lot of times we have posters in our rooms, so patients are already looking at that, using those QR codes to look at Lifeline of Ohio's website to get more information.
Okay.
But you'll come see me typically at the end of your pregnancy if we're scheduling a C-section.
Scheduler.
Yeah. And we'll go through some education and we'll talk about that. They'll get Lifeline of Ohio's phone number at that time, but they will contact them within 2 weeks of their procedure to ask them some health screening questionnaires.
Okay. So, and again, all, like, so a lot of this is planned ahead of time and on the up and up and all of that. And so that is wild. So they can actually make, like, they just help others with
they
it.
They do. They yep. do.
That's so good.
Yeah.
It is awesome.
Yes, it is. All right. Well, that is something that you certainly could consider. And it's not just Holzer. I'm sure that other, you know, places are participating in this program as well. So, you know, if you're watching and this is just a throw out for everyone, ask.
Yeah, definitely.
Ask about it.
And just a few, just to touch on a few frequently asked questions that I'll get.
Yeah.
This doesn't have anything to do with cord blood banking. If you guys have heard of cord blood banking.
No, what's that?
That's where you donate, you don't donate. You collect the blood from the umbilical cord. So it's baby's blood. It's rich in, you know, fetal stem cells and all kinds of stuff. And you pay a service to store that on ice, basically, and deep freeze. If in the future your baby had some kind of illness and required what we call pluripotent stem cells, if they had like leukemia or something like that. So that is a cord blood banking
that's
service.
That's a whole other situation.
Doesn't have anything to do with this at all.
Okay.
Again, I'll emphasize no cost to the patient, no additional procedures that are necessary. We just collect the placenta as we typically would. The surgical techs have a little bit of a special procedure after the placenta's out that they take care of on their end.
You'll never know anything happened.
Yeah, nothing different. So,
no, I think that is absolutely amazing. And if you can help others along the way, I've just always been the kind to not understand. I don't even want to get on the whole organ donation thing because I don't understand. You don't need them. So why not donate them? But anyway, that's my opinion.
Well, and that's not to belittle or belie how significant organ donation is. I mean, it's a huge undertaking for, you know, especially if someone is not already identified as an organ donor on their driver's license or something like that.
Yes.
Family members have to decide for them, you know, if they're obtunded or can't communicate themselves, are they going to be an organ donor? That's a huge process. It's a big deal. This is really easy.
No, it's not.
This is as easy as saying, I don't throw it away, give it to somebody.
Right, because it's going to literally get thrown away.
Yeah.
So, okay. I think that's amazing. Wow. And you can help others. Oh, that's so good. Well, cool. Well, what else would you guys like to talk about while you're here?
I don't know either.
I don't know. The Reds won their first game. Did you see that?
So good.
Yeah.
And I will say that I picked in the total media pool, I picked Purdue to win the NCAA championship. So we're still in it.
Well,
Final Four anyway. Hey,
there you go.
So see us all positive. It's there a happy go. Monday. So, okay. I've got a question for you then. This has nothing to do with anything that you guys do with work.
Okay.
Has anyone ever pulled an April Fool's prank on you that was like good? Like that you're like, oh man, they got me.
My nurse got me pretty good. I'm hesitant to even tell this story.
Oh, it must be really good then.
My nurse, her name's Cassie. She is a very outgoing, very outspoken, kind of extroverted person. And I am also her doctor. And so she has been single for decades and decades and decades. It's just not something that interests her. And she jokes about it all the time. Well, she came in for her exam and it was, I went in and I was going to be completely professional. I was going to she bought some fake cobwebs.
Oh my God.
And if you can imagine,
awesome.
If you can imagine that exam, and she tells that story to everyone. This is not a HIPAA violation by any means.
So good.
She tells that story to everyone she meets. No HIPAA violation here. She hid the cobwebs where you can imagine. And I was just completely taken aback. She got me. anyway.
That's probably one of the best I've ever heard.
I'll never forget. It was terrible. She's probably going to laugh when she sees this.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't have any stories like that.
No.
How about you?
I'm not too exciting. Yeah.
No, I came in today and I don't know if Dylan, can you find the Halloween situation?
The what?
The Halloween situation where Jeremiah tried to kill me.
Oh yeah, I'll find that.
The Halloween situation.
There was a Halloween situation. So I'm driving to work this morning thinking of that. And I was thinking it was April Fool's, but now that I think about it, it was Halloween. So the first thing I was going to do this morning was look behind that curtain.
The green screen.
Because. Did you find it?
I'm really struggling to find it. Give me a second.
Yeah. So on Halloween this year, Jeremiah, and it was like forever. It was like 2/3 into the show. Jeremiah hid behind that screen and then like it just rando jumps out and like grabs me. And I thought I was going to die. I mean, that was like, and I cannot believe that totally inappropriate words did not come out of my mouth, but I don't think they did. But, so I will give them that. That was not April Fool's. It was Halloween, but they got me.
Well,
and everyone just thought it was just the funniest thing except for me. Actually, it's pretty funny.
So my dad was my insurance agent. He worked for State Farm for years.
Yes.
And I found a picture of the same kind of truck that I drove, but it had been like bashed in the front, and I sent it to him. And I said, I hit a deer, man. I'm going to have to turn in a claim. And he's like, calls me and he's like,
oh no.
And I was like, April Fools. And he was like, that's not funny, man. That's not even, I thought, was wondering if you were okay. Like, I was like, that's the best kind of April Fools joke when you're
right,
like,
I'm okay.
Questioning someone's safety. Yeah.
Exactly.
Heartless. Heartless, man. Ruthless.
That is heartless. That's pretty rough.
That was a bad one.
Yeah.
But. No.
You haven't done one to someone?
Not that I remember.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
She's too sweet.
She is. She's just
find
the nicest. It?
I only managed to find the vertical one, but it's still really funny.
Shove it, Freddy Krueger. So I saw, God, I wish I had sent it to Dylan. Yeah, that happened. Shove it, Freddy Krueger. So I saw, I wish I had sent it to Dylan.
Oh my God! Oh my God! I hate you! Oh my God!
That was like a bit obnoxious, but completely honest response to that.
I'm still waiting for the April Fools to happen.
I know. That's when I walked in, I saw Jeremiah, and I'm like, don't even.
Every time I come on this show, last time I was here, it was the Bengals were in the playoffs, and like somebody tossed me the Bengals hat. You remember that?
Dang it.
Yeah. No. Okay. Shoot. Well.
Well.
Next time.
We have a few minutes. You just never, never know.
All right.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. I want to thank you guys for spending the morning with us. It's always so fun to have our friends from Holzer here. And, to talk about all the interesting things that you get into, because it is a wonderful thing. Again, could you tell everybody how to get scheduled if they would like to see Dr. Bowers or one of the OBGYN doctors?
Sure, absolutely. You can give us a call at 740-446-5381. All providers have online scheduling, so you can also go to www.holzer.org.
There you go. Oh, and real quick, while you're here, televisits. Are you doing any of those?
Yes.
Those can come in handy as well.
I do video visits. I do telephone visits. Right now, there's some restrictions on doing those visits across state lines.
Mm-hmm.
If any of my patients are watching that are located in West Virginia, that's not an option for them.
Okay.
But certainly those patients who are in the state of Ohio, we can do telemedicine, no problem. We have those capabilities.
And what would be a good reason to do a televisit versus, coming in to see you?
A lot of patients are doing, yeah, like med rechecks. So, you know, if I start you on, you know, something for a urinary tract infection.
Okay.
And I just wanted to see how you're doing. Are your symptoms getting better? That'd be a very normal follow-up visit to do on telemedicine to say, hey, yeah, I'm better.
And you can just do that from, you know, from work or whatever. You don't have to take off work to go.
Absolutely.
You know, all the way into the clinic just to do that. So it's just a matter of convenience for everybody.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. And, you know, Holzer does that throughout. So even your primary care physician, you know, whatever, you can get a hold of them and talk with them that way. And if you, you know, it's just convenience.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So, and of course there's other, there's reasons why you wouldn't want to do that, but
fair. Yeah. Yeah.
But, I think that's just a really cool thing. And how do you get those set up? Same way.
A lot of patients will actually message me through the patient portal and say, hey, could this visit be a telemedicine visit instead of an in-person visit? And that lets me say, okay, is this something I can do telemedicine, or are they going to need some kind of exam?
Sure.
And so then I can message them back and say, nah, you probably need to actually come in for this because XYZ, or no, I think we could probably make that work.
Okay. And that's the best thing. Just ask, right?
Yeah. Awesome. No, and that's, it's a really cool thing about the patient portal is you have a lot of access to your healthcare providers. So.
Right. And it's like something that you never had before. You know, you had, would have to call, and then they'd have to call you back or whatever. And this is almost just like a messaging thing. Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's very easy. I mean, I'm sure you all have a million messages to answer, but
got a few.
It's convenient that you can just type an answer back and that's cool.
And my staff is really, so I was on vacation last week. My staff is really good about making sure that those messages get sent where they need to go to, like, other providers if it's something urgent.
Okay.
It's like, oh, this needs addressed now. But, you know, if it's something that's not as urgent, then, you know, definitely it might take a day or two, but we'll get back to you.
Okay. See, and there you go. That's yet another service provided by our friends at Holzer.
There you go.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you so much for spending your morning with us. We appreciate it. And we will be back tomorrow. Weather not looking all the best this week. It's warm out there today. I saw
some snow flurries in one of the predictions.
Super bizarre. What? Like some really kind of gnarly thunderstorms and stuff coming through the area. So
hopefully it was April Fool's.
There you go.
Hopefully.
Yes. We'll go with that.
Yeah.
No hail or other things. So. All right. Have a great day, and we'll be right back here tomorrow. Thanks for watching. Bye-bye, everyone.